This one is called Captain Ballard and the Space Wraiths. Sam Ballard was putting butter and jam on his toast when he heard the soft chime in his head. He took a bite of toast, wiped a smear of buttery blackberry jam from his lips, and cued his Mentex, whom he had named Francis, by pressing his tongue against his upper left molar. "Search completed," came the gentle feminine voice in his head. A holographic heads-up display appeared in front of him. He read the ads as he munched on his breakfast. They were all ships within his price range. Some were complete Zalgos, with extensive damage and inoperable star drives, what the sellers termed as fixer-uppers, and he dismissed as junk, or worse, feywa. He knew from scanning the ads over the last 4 months that finding a ship matching his specifications, that he could afford, was next to impossible. But being stranded on Cestus 7 was driving him crazy. It might be Earth's outermost colony and sparsely populated, but it was still too populated and loud for his taste. He had taken to calling his new home planet Cepsis 7. And he missed being in space, commanding his own vessel. His last ship, a Federation Nova-class cruiser, christened the Shrike, had been lost after a run-in with the Kriegash. His helmsmen and tactical officers had both panicked, and the ship was obliterated. Only Ballard and a handful of crew had made it to the escape pods in time. He could have blamed his cowardly bridge officers, but the responsibility was his. He was the captain, after all. He had been court-martialed and drummed out of the fleet. After that, he could only get the most menial of jobs, things they wouldn't risk using expensive androids or alien prisoners on. He had to get back out there. He wasn't naive enough to think he would regain his commission and get an IFW fleet ship. He was just tired of being planet-bound. Space was in his blood. Today's search looked like another dead end. He was ready to switch off the holo feed when an item caught his eye. "New ship for sale. Matrosian cruiser, Ixil class. Snart drive, Huion crystal intact. Shields, weapons, life support, all nominal. Perfect for explorers, smugglers, and soldiers of fortunes. 50,000 fetids, or the equivalent in precious metals. Contact Mills Nimbus, Mentex 3 Zao Omega Epsilon 005-1A59. Full disclosure, ship is haunted. Serious inquiries only." The holo showed a real beauty with clean lines, minimal blast damage, and almost no magal ray scarring. And the Quiyun crystal micro holo showed a complete absence of fractures, defects, or infact bubbles. A ship with that engine could easily hit jump speed in a nanosecond, he thought. He looked at that one word again. Haunted. Really? He couldn't remember the last time he had heard the term. Oh, spacers had plenty of tall tales, but ghost stories were strictly stuff to scare kids into brushing their teeth, preening their feathers, or hawking their mid-zussners. Perhaps the whole ad was a joke, or a come-on from some new vid-stream idiocy. But the ship was a beauty and the price was a steal. He decided to check it out. Mills Nimbus turned out to be a short and nervous Tangelian. All five of his eyes were covered with antiquated correctional lenses. Ballard wasn't sure if he was cultivating a look of retro sophistication or was just too broke to afford any of the hundreds of optical enhancements and surgeries available in the Intergalactic Federation of Worlds. Nimbus was sweating and constantly wringing its front flippers. The translation interface in his tank of saline solution and methane was glitchy, so Ballard only understood about 75% of what Nimbus said, but he got the gist. No, Nimbus did not own the ship, but he was the middle being for a party who had inherited it from their late progenitors, Fleck and Durin Yasoho'ek, who had died when all airlocks on the ship had opened simultaneously somewhere out near Antares. "A glitch?" Ballard asked. Nimbus looked around nervously as if he was being watched. "Ghost," he answered. Ballard tried to keep from laughing. He asked Nimbus if the problem was the airlocks had been fixed, and Nimbus responded that all systems on the ship were nominal. Nimbus then muttered something under his breath, but the translator had problems with the low volume and a sudden sneezing fit on the part of the Tangelian. Ballard believed, he said, that all systems had been nominal when Fleck and Durin went for an unscheduled spacewalk wearing nothing but their underwear. Ballard made a note to give Francis made a note to Francis to give all systems a going over. Nimbus said Ballard was free to inspect the ship, which was berthed in slot 35 of the station. If he was satisfied with the vessel, then his FedEx would be deposited in Nimbus's IFW account. "Will you be coming along?" Ballard asked Nimbus. His tank was fitted with anti-gravity pods, which would allow him to travel to the berth easily and quickly. What followed was a frightened exhalation of words the translator either could not or would not translate into Ballard's native Chinglish. Ballard guessed they were Tangelian swear words. The inhabitants of Tangel 7 were well known for their creative use of sarcasm and metaphor, as well as body and ancestor shaming of numerous species. Some members of other races had taken to reciting prime Tangelian rants in bars, coffee houses, and college cafeterias, often to music that was harder to listen to as the curses of Tangel 7. Ballard directed Francis to record the exchange and give him a translation later. Nimbus quickly recovered and told Ballard he had another meeting. He gave Ballard the access code and informed him the engines were currently locked out with a 20-level Hedvian encryption. Once Ballard bought the ship, he would be given the appropriate codes. On his way to Berth 35, Ballard had Francis check for prospective buyers of the supposedly haunted ship. Francis was able to do even better. She hacked into the security station and obtained footage of five previous individuals who had inspected the ship. All five had entered the ship and had beat a hasty retreat within 20 minutes. One, a big bruiser who had commanded a mercenary group out near Aldebaran, fled the ship when crying like a baby. In his haste, he ran straight into a bulkhead and knocked himself out. Maybe there was something to the ship being haunted after all. Nah, ghosts were just a load of feywa. Still, it was better to be cautious. He told Francis to have countermeasures in place if he were attacked. Ballard caught sight of the ship and gasped. It was even more beautiful than the Hollows had led him to believe. Sleek and shining, it put the Shrike to shame. Here was a ship designed by an artist, not an engineer. The Matrosians were the Michelangelos and Uroths of ship design. Such a ship would require a crew of 20 with room for a dozen passengers. He knew from the specs that there were also spacious cargo holds and two shuttles aboard for landing parties. Ballard walked through the umbilical to the main airlock. He keyed in the access code and the door opened swiftly and silently. Here it goes, he thought. Ballard walked in, hand on his Gaharn blaster, which was known as on most worlds as a bone broiler. The ship was silent and the lighting was dim. "Lights to operation level," he said, and the lights brightened. Nothing wrong with the vocal interface. He started toward the turbo lift. A screaming head came flying down the corridor straight at him. Ballard dunked instinctively, and the head flew past him. The head banked, did a 180, and came at it again, still screaming. Ballard drew his bone broiler and fired, hitting the screaming face dead center. The pulse beam passed through the specter and blackened a plaque placed there by the previous, and dead, captain. The flying head, laughing now, flew through a wall and disappeared. Then more specters appeared, and zombies, and vampires, melting and scabrous skeletons, lizard men, amphibious women, a Regulan hell beast, hordes of venomous spiders, a centaur riddled with weeping sores and massive boils, a decomposing hag. Ballard fired at the first dozen individuals, all to no effect. He consulted Francis whether what he was seeing were merely holograms or perhaps hallucinations from some sort of drug. She assured him they were not. Though immaterial, the things were there. He tried ignoring them, figured they would get tired of their games and leave him alone. This only encouraged him. They began to manifest as terrors from his earliest childhood, demons and monsters that had haunted his dreams and left him screaming. And then they began hitting him, biting him, throwing things at him. Luckily, Francis had implanted a Gaharn personal shield generator in his body before he had boarded, and this had saved him from maiming and mutilation. Finally, angry they were not able to scare him off, the ghost opened an airlock with no umbilicus attached and began pushing him toward open space. "Enough!" Ballard yelled, following that single word with a multilingual string of curses that would have made the Tangelians blush. The ghost seemed surprised at this, and he heard a couple of them murmur appreciatively at his prowess with off-color invectives. "Everyone on the ship, meet me in the conference room now," he ordered. For all their anger and aggression, the Spectres on the ship had been in service on a number of starships. They were susceptible to orders if those orders were delivered with force and clarity. Ballard made his way to the conference room. No one tried to stop him. No one tried to space him or eat his face. In the conference room, 22 souls had gathered. They now appeared as they had in life, many still wearing the uniform of the fleet. There were beings from 10 different worlds, three of which Ballard had no knowledge. They looked at him, and Ballard knew this was his moment to reach them or be torn apart. I know you have done your level best to scare prospective buyers away from this ship. Mosa just looked at him sullenly. A couple of phantoms, one insectoid and the other gelatinous, snickered. Why are you so intent on doing so? Ballard asked. Because this is our ship, said a massive and tusked individual wearing a red and black uniform of a weapons officer. His nameplate read, Commander Tarn. The others nodded. So, said Ballard, you're happy to haunt a ship that doesn't go anywhere? They looked confused. Some of them looked at one another as if this had not occurred to them. I was drummed out of the fleet, Ballard told them. I was able to retire to a nice home on Cepsis 7. Cestus 7, he corrected. I know that ball of dung, a Lagallan science officer said. You were right the first time. The point is, Ballard continued, I was bored out of my skull. I don't want to be planet-bound, no matter how nice in the nearby lake are. In actuality, his home was a piece of crap, and the lake was polluted, home only to the most virulent and venomous fish and eels, but that wouldn't help his case. Ballard gestured towards one of the large windows, the vast blackness of space glittering with stars beckoning. Don't you want to be out there? Don't you want to hear the thrum of the snart engine and see what lies beyond the boundaries of civilized space? Several of the ghosts murmured. Commander Tarn grunted. What are you offering? Money? We have no use for it. Not anymore. Ballard laughed harshly. Money? None of us joined the fleet for money. Did any of you make a decent wage as spacers for the IFW? They shook their heads. But were you happy? Most of them nodded. That's what I'm offering you, Ballard said. A chance to be part of a crew again, to explore and to fight and reach the farthest corners of the galaxy, to belong. He could see he had reached most of them, but Tarn curled his lip. Why should we follow you, he asked. Because to the Federation, I'm dead too. We wouldn't be flying under the IFW banner, but I guarantee you, you will see more action and more wonders than you ever did in life. A young ensign stepped forward. Ballard was surprised to see it was his former helmsman, Jacoby. He saluted. Good to see you again, sir. And you, Ensign Jacoby. Sorry I let you down on the shrike, sir. I'm to blame, Ensign. Facing the Kreegosh would have been daunting for anyone, and you were on your first tour. Jacoby turned to the other ghosts gathered around the table. His eyes glistened with phantom tears. He was the best captain in the fleet, Jacoby said. I'd follow him again in a heartbeat. If I had a heartbeat, he amended. They all looked at Jacoby, then at Ballard. Would you give us a moment, Captain? Tarn asked. Ballard nodded and stepped out into the corridor. 4 years later, everyone in the quadrant knew of Captain Ballard and his starship, the Wraith. Most had never seen his crew, and there were rumors that Ballard was some sort of godlike being that could pilot a 20-man ship on his own. Others knew full well the terrors under his command, things out of a nightmare that could suddenly appear on your bridge, in your quarters, or the lavatory. The IFW wanted Ballard and his crew to join the fleet, but he was happy exploring, fighting, and adventuring with no one to answer to. And nowadays, even the Kreegosh kept their distance, because the crew of the Wraith seemed to know no fear. It's easy to be unafraid of death, Ballard thought, when you're already dead.